You know, continuing this theme, and with Matt's family here, we just finished 5 weeks of going through the Lord's Prayer. And it was a very specific rendering of the Lord's Prayer, looking at it through the Aramaic and the Hebrew, because when you do that and when you see it as it really was intended to be understood by Jesus' first hearers, you realize that it was never a prayer to be recited. It was never a prayer to even be spoken intellectually. It was a prayer that was supposed to be lived. And in living this prayer, it takes you on a journey. And the journey is to finding out who our Father in heaven really is. And knowing that, with that one piece, everything starts to fall into place in our lives. If we truly know who our Father is, then we can start to drop the fear of the risk and the compulsions and obsessions and everything that we hang on to in order to get through our days, in order to not be too afraid to get up in the morning. And understanding that, I started to put things together this week as I was thinking about Sunday. Then I got an email from another one of our guys, and I wanted to read part of it to you because it kind of set the stage for everything that I want to say this morning. And he writes, last Monday, "Hi, Dave. I apologize for not being around lately, but you all are in my heart. I have an obligation to a 6-man outrigger team that has taken up my weekends. But I think of your words a lot when I'm with my higher power and digging deep for energy, out on the ocean when I'm in my own head. Your voice resonates out there as well. Heck of a PA system you have. When I heard of Matthew's accident, which happened to be on Saturday, I burst into tears. I had promised Matthew that I would teach him to surf. Now, I took Matt surfing a couple of times, but I never spent the time that I wished I would have in really teaching him. Matthew and I always had something to talk about. We always made plans together. Mountain biking, camping, climbing. But I always failed him. I hope this doesn't bother you, but I need to get it off my chest. This is my second friend this year that I have lost and whom I have an unfulfilled promise to. I'm having a problem with this. Can you advise and remind me on the best way to live for them and remember how fragile life truly is?" Wow, what a question, huh? Can you advise and remind me the best way to live for my friends, for Matthew, and remember how fragile life truly is? What would you say? What would you advise? Where would you start? What would you want to talk about? You know, what he's asking, I believe, is probably the biggest question that we can ask in life. How do we live without regret? How do we live without recrimination? How do we live without guilt? Ultimately, how do we live without fear? How do we do that? This is the biggest question in life that we can ask. And coming off the Lord's Prayer, the answer is there. It's embedded there. But I think we need to take another look at how that really works in our life. And I want to take you on a little journey this morning, actually. It's kind of going the long way home, which I typically do. So I'm going to start out here, but I promise I'll bring it back and hopefully on time. But I've talked in here before about the hero's journey, and I think we need to talk about it again. How many of you have heard of the idea or the concept of the hero's journey? Okay, a few of you. It was kind of popularized by Joseph Campbell, especially in his Power of Myth back in the 80s with Bill Moyers and all that. But he wrote a book, and the idea was that there is really only one story that we tell ourselves. Since we were gathered around campfires and caves until now, there is one story that we tell over and over again. And it's the same story that just shape shifts and moves around and has different faces and details, but the elements are the same. And it's the same story that Homer told about Odysseus when he goes for 20 years to fight the Trojan War and his odyssey back to Ithaca and to his queen and to his home. It's the same story that the medieval English told each other about Parsifal and the quest for the Holy Grail. It's the same story that we tell about Luke Skywalker moving across the Star Wars universe. It's the same story about Dorothy Gale and The Wizard of Oz, or The Matrix, or Gladiator, or any of these movies and stories that are common to us and that we enjoy. It's really the same story over and over again, and it has the same elements, and there's a reason for this. The story usually starts with the hero, who may not even know he or she is a hero yet, in their ordinary world, living by the ordinary rules of their life. But something happens. Either they are jarred out of that world into a new world, they long to move into a new world, or some wounding or trauma happens to kick them out of their normal processes of life and into this new world. Alice falls down the rabbit hole, and all the rules are different. There's fantastic creatures and different ways of having to live life and deal with things. All sorts of challenges crop up. And then there's usually a guide that comes along and helps and gives them some sort of tool or a gift or something that they can use as they try to negotiate all the challenges that they're going to face. And there's a major task that they have to complete, at least one. And if they complete it and they can come back on the return journey, then there usually are more challenges and more things that they have to face. And finally, they are given some sort of gift, some sort of boon, some sort of understanding or insight that they can bring back to their home. And they are changed, and their community is changed by them when they return. The shorthand for me, the easiest one, is The Wizard of Oz. And just think about that story for a second. Dorothy is in her black and white Kansas, and she's hating life. Her parents are dead, possibly. We don't really know why she is living with Auntie Em and Uncle Henry, but she longs to go someplace else. She longs for passion. She longs for adventure. She longs for color instead of black and white. And she is longing for something over the rainbow. And so finally, her longing plus the threat to her dog propels her to run away. And so she's running away. But the storm is coming up, and she meets Professor Marvel, who is the first of her guides, her helpers. Actually, he's the same guy all the way throughout. He is Professor Marvel. He's the doorman at the Emerald City. He's the cabbie. He's the wizard's guard. And he's also the wizard himself. He keeps coming up. He is at once the symbol of everything exotic that she wants, and he's also the guide. But he shows her in the crystal ball, Auntie M worrying about her. And so she decides to refuse the call and go back home. And we can do that as we're being called. We can refuse the call if we want to. But even though she tries to, she gets home and the storm takes her to Oz anyway. And there she meets all these different characters and munchkins and flying monkeys and witches and this and that. But she finds out that she needs to go to Oz. And she is given first a pair of ruby slippers. She is given her marching orders from the Good Witch. And as along the way, she starts to meet some traveling companions, the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Lion. But in reality, these are only the undiscovered parts of herself. Her own intellect, her own compassion, her own sense of courage and fulfillment in action. And they become real to her along the way as she is progressing through this journey. And they are developed in her. And when she gets to Oz and she's told she needs to get the broomstick of the Wicked Witch, she has her task, the thing that she has to do. And she goes off and she completes the task and comes back, unmasks the wizard, and then finally finds out at the end that she always had the power to go home. Her journey transformed first from a need for passion and adventure to simply getting back home to Auntie Em and Uncle Henry. But when she gets back, she realizes that her journey was about something else entirely. And this is what the journeys do. You know, they have these main three parts. The first is separation. The person is separated from their normal life. Now think this through with me, because as a child, each one of us goes through this hero's journey. Why do you think that people have been telling this story to ourselves, to each other, for as long as there have been people on the earth, since before recorded history? Because it is actually mirroring the spiritual and psychological journey of every human being. Every one of us grows up as a child, understanding the world of the child, comfortable in the world of the child, until something jars us out of it. And we are thrust into the world of the adult, which we don't understand, which has monsters out there and rules that we don't get. And there are people who will come alongside us and help us, but we have to avail ourselves of that help. And we have to answer the call to move forward anyway. The Garden of Eden in the Bible is another story. Adam and Eve in the garden until they eat of the tree of good and evil and they are cast out and they can't go back. They can only go forward. Each one of us goes through this in life, whether we realize it or not. And so the separation is the necessary part. We think it's so terrible when our children get wounded or find out that they can be hurt, they can be, you know, betrayed, but it's a necessary part of life. To leave the world of the child, we have to be kicked out of the nest. The second part is the transition. The transition from where we were, where we came as a child into this world, and moving into becoming a successful member of the adult world, of that new society. And then finally, there is the return, the coming back to where we started. These three pieces, no matter what story you look at, and think of the movies that you really enjoy, movies that start with a character, a hero, an anti-hero being moved out of their normal life and coming back again. They have those three elements. Have you all heard of rites of passage? I'm sure you've heard of rites of passage. It's the same thing. The three elements of a rite of passage is separation, transition, and reincorporation, bringing back. And if you think about the rites of passage of the Aboriginal tribes, the way they're practiced, the Aborigines in Australia, for instance, they have the walkabout. When a boy is of age, he is sent on walkabout, which means he leaves the community. He leaves the village. He leaves the company of the women who have tended to him his entire life. And he goes out, and he has to make a journey, and he follows the song lines of his tribe. They're called song lines. They're songs that are sung that in the lyric has all of the landmarks and the features of the land. And by reciting the song, he can negotiate through the land. Sometimes by stringing songs together over vast distances across the bush. And eventually the boy, in the transition of the walkabout, who becomes a man, is reincorporated, brought back into the tribe at the end of the walkabout, and celebrated now as in the company of the men and not of the children. And all of these rites of passage have that same three elements to them. You know, modern Western society is the only society that has no rites of passage anymore. We have no rites of passage. And it's devastating, especially our boys. Not so much the women, because they have internal rites of passage that they can go through anyway. Childbirth is a rite of passage that is biological. But the boys need these rites of passage, and there's nothing there. Maybe the closest thing that we've got in our society to a rite of passage, well, maybe going to college used to be a rite of passage. Separation, you leave your house, you go to college. Transition, going through the years of schooling, and then reincorporation back. The problem is, the way colleges are run today, there's really no transition. There's separation and reincorporation, but where's the transition? Our children are allowed to continue to be children in college, and they don't have to transition anywhere. So maybe a better example is the military. Now, you certainly have separation and transition, you know, hard separation, hard transition. But what about the reincorporation? When our soldiers came back from Vietnam, they were not reincorporated into society. They were reviled almost as monsters because our society had changed. And even now today, there's half the country that does not respect the military, and reincorporation is tough. And sometimes the transition in military life in battle is so traumatic that the soldiers come back deeply wounded. We say, oh, you know, the first haircut's a rite of passage. The debutante ball's a rite of passage. But it doesn't contain those three elements. It doesn't have the power to move us from one state to another. And that is the whole point. That's the whole purpose. That is the purpose of our lives in the hero's journey. But we've got these smaller cycles within the larger cycle of our life. And we think about it, Matthew's journey to California was a rite of passage. It was a hero's journey. It had all three of the elements to it. Because of the events at home and the trauma that he was facing at home, he was kicked out of the nest and he came to California to enter into recovery. And through this period, over the last three and a half years, he's been in intense transition. And when he came home and was reincorporated back home, the comments that I was getting from his family was that he didn't look like a kid anymore. He looked like a man. He had grown. He had grown up. He had gone through a hero's journey. He had gone through a rite of passage. And he had moved from one state to another. This is ideally what needs to happen to all of us. The Lord's Prayer is a mode and a method within those three stages for us to move through these, to keep God at the center of our lives and our focus while we're moving through them. But we need to move through them. Now, what does Jesus say about this? Does he talk about this? You bet he does. He says, and I have it here in your bulletins if you want to take a look, at Matthew 7, 7 through 8. He says, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened." Now, we listen to this and we see these words as Westerners and they kind of roll over us. And in our language, in our way of looking at things, it seems kind of passive. But we can ask and something is given to us. And we can seek, you know, kind of like I look for, you know, my wallet in the house and I'm going to find it. And then knock and it's going to be opened. It's almost like all the work is done on the other side of the ledger, on the other side of the equation. And we can be kind of passive. But when you render this back into the Aramaic and you understand the meaning of each of these three words, ask, seek, and knock, a very different picture emerges. In Aramaic, ask is selu. And it comes from the word selah, which is the word for prayer. To pray is selah in Aramaic. But selah, to pray in Aramaic, means to lean into. It means to have that kind of attitude that everything is listening. It's active listening. You're leaning, you're alert. Your body language is moving forward, moving into. It comes from a hunting term, to lay a snare for, where you clear a space in the woods and you carefully lay your trap and you cover it over and you retreat into the blinds to expectantly wait for something to happen. This is the attitude of prayer. This clearing a space and expectantly waiting, leaning in, every sense on a hair trigger to connect with our God. Selah is the kind of questioning that has that same attitude, a leaning in. It's more like a police interrogation, if you will. There's an intensity behind it, a yearning, a desire behind it. And it's a desire that will cause us to move. It's not passive. It doesn't allow us to be static. This questioning, this desire to know, moves us, separates us, moves us away from where we are. Stage one. Second stage, seek, be'a in Aramaic, means to search diligently from inside to outside. Literally, it means to empty yourself out. You know, if you're really looking for something that you've got to have, what do? You empty out every drawer. You empty out everything. You leave no stone unturned. You're pulling mattresses off the bed. You're looking in every corner, every crevice, every cranny to try to find what you're looking for. If you're doing this from the inside of your spirit out, you're doing the same thing. You're clearing out everything that's there to search diligently from there to the exterior of your life. This is the transition. And then finally, koshv, which is knock in Aramaic, is the strangest one of all. It literally means to nail in a tent peg, to hammer a nail, or to strike a note, a musical note. And when I first read that, I thought, what in the world does that have to do with what we're talking about here? Well, it literally means to kind of knock. But what it really means when you think about it, when you strike a note, the note goes from theory, from potential, let's say you're striking a bell, to something that is ringing in the atmosphere that everybody can hear, can experience. It makes it real. When you hammer a tent peg, the tent is going from something that's folded and flat to something that can actually house a family, can create the space for relationship to happen. What it really means is to realize, to manifest, to make real. So if you think about what Jesus is saying, ask with the kind of of intensity and desire that moves you off your place to someplace else. Then to seek diligently to empty everything out and to move through all the parts of your life to find something different, something new, something you haven't considered before. And through that process, it does become real and manifests in your life. It's a rite of passage. It's a hero's journey. This is what Jesus is talking about with ask, seek, and knock. It's what he's trying to show us about the course our life can take, the milestones along the way. But now, remembering our first question, how do we live without regret? What is it that we're realizing? What is it that we're starting to make real in our lives if we can go through this process, if we can do these things that Jesus is calling us to do? Well, let's go back to Dorothy. At the very end, right before she clicks her heels and goes home, she's standing there with her three traveling companions and with the good witch Glinda, and the Tin Woodman asks her, "What have you learned, Dorothy?" Remember what she says? She says, "I have learned that it wasn't enough for me to just want to see Uncle Henry and Auntie M." That's the first thing. She started to understand that her journey was not what she thought it was supposed to be. She thought it was about passion and adventure. Then she thought it was about just getting home. Now she's realizing it's something else. What this journey does is to teach us that whatever we thought the journey was about is not what the journey was about. It's sneaky that way. Think about whatever it is that you endeavor to try to get out of life. The journeys that you go on to try to do something specific. No matter how noble it may be, recovery is your goal. That's your journey. But recovery is not the reason for the journey. It's the impetus. It's what you start with. But through the process of recovering, you find out that there's something else at play here. The issue is not the issue. It's something else that is going on. Her second part of the line is, "It wasn't enough for me to go just to want to see uncle and aunt again. But if I'm ever going to go find my heart's desire, I'm not going to look any further than my own backyard. Because if it wasn't there, then I never really lost it to begin with." And then she says, "Is that right?" Yes, that's right. What she has understood is that everything that she needed, she already had. In essence, there was no reason for her to go on any journey at all. She didn't have to take a single step out of her black and white backyard. But she needed to in order to find out that she didn't have to take a step out of her own backyard. You know, one of the most frustrating lines in the whole Wizard of Oz to me is, you know, "Those shoes could have taken you home anytime you wanted to." Well, why didn't you tell her? Because she had to find out for herself. And each one of us has to find out for ourselves that already inside, since the beginning of time, since the time that we were born, God has gifted us with everything that we will ever need to become full human beings, to become one with the Father, to be able to live and love as the Father loved, as Jesus lived and loved, as he showed us how to do. We can do these things. We are equipped. But before we can do that, the journey is the means by which we empty out everything that blocks us from that realization, from that understanding, from that knowing. That's the function of the journey. It just culls out, you know, just gets rid of all the stuff that we think we know, that we think we understand, that is only keeping us from the full realization of what's going on. T.S. Eliot famously wrote in one of his poems that at the end of all our exploring, we will end up where we started, but know the place for the first time. That's it. We end up exactly where we started, but we know the place. We understand something that we didn't understand before. Okay, how about the Bible? Does the Bible cover the same sort of territory? Think about Abraham. Abraham was promised when he left and was called out of his comfortable life in Mesopotamia. He was called out to be the father of a multitude, the father of a nation that would be as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the shore. And he believed that was his journey, that was his purpose, that's why he needed to go. But at the climax of his journey, he is asked to sacrifice his son. And of course, we look at that and say, why would God do that? He has to kill his own son? But we miss the point. The point is that to Abraham, in his single-minded effort to realize God's promise to him, to be this father of a multitude, he had to have a son. And all the things that he did, you know, sleeping with his concubine and having Ishmael and all these things that he worried about, when he finally got the son of promise, the miracle child, everything was focused on that child. That was the means to the fulfillment of God's promise. The moment that he was finally able to let go of Isaac, let go of what he was holding on to, he finally became the man of faith that we now call the father of our faith. He had to let go. He had to be emptied out of what he thought his journey was about in order to become what the journey was really about. It wasn't about Isaac. It wasn't even about the nation. It was about his faith that would be the foundation for the nation that still exists today in each one of us. A few generations later, there's Moses. Moses is called out of his Cush retirement in Midian, you know, with his father-in-law Jethro, to go back to Pharaoh, you know, go back to the unholy land, to pull his people out. And he thinks that's his goal, to get his people to the promised land. And for the next 80 years, that's what he's focused on. You know, next 40 years, that's what he's focused on, taking them through the desert, getting them to the promised land. But at Mount Nebo, where he's looking at the land itself, all the way to the Western Sea, the Mediterranean, he realizes something else. It wasn't about a piece of property. It wasn't about a territory. It wasn't about a kingdom. It was about a people that could walk in the presence of their God. And now he realized he was going to be the impediment. He, as prophet, he, as wayshower, was going to be the one that the people looked to instead of looking directly to their God, connecting with him and becoming the nation that they were supposed to be. And he dies on Mount Nebo and never goes into the land. In effect, he lays down his life for the good of the people, for the greater good. But he realized he had that moment. The journey was not about the promised land. It was about the people themselves and their relationship with their God. Generations later, Solomon. At the end of his life, he writes the book of Ecclesiastes. He had spent his whole life acquiring wealth and acquiring wisdom. And he thought that was his journey, to acquire wisdom, to be the wisest man on earth. And he gets to the end of his life and he realizes, I'm going to die like every fool who just sleeps in the bushes. Yeah, everything is vanity. Everything is worthless. But he realized that it wasn't about wisdom. It was about finally understanding the leveling effect of perfect love. That perfect love has no degree. That perfect love loves everything and everyone equally. And so the wise man and the fool, the good man and the bad man, the rain and the sun falls on each alike. And everyone is reduced to the same fate. And on one hand, that sounds like a bad thing. But it's the best news that you could ever have. The journey wasn't about what Solomon thought. It was about something completely different. We journey for big things. We want to go for the big things, right? A legacy, a nation that will revere us for all of time, a promised land, a homeland, somewhere we can go to, wealth, wisdom, all the trappings of life, passion, adventure, and even recovery and health, career. All of these things are the things that we go through. We go for, but the purpose of the journey is not those things. The pursuit of those things will take us to another place. It will empty ourselves of all the things that we thought we knew, empty ourselves of everything so that we can finally see what was always there, what God put there, what God gave us. And we don't have to go anywhere necessarily, but yeah, we do. To empty ourselves. Serapion is quoted as saying, I have sold the book, which told me to sell everything and give to the poor. That is the final expression of emptying. When we hold our own Bible as a thing that we would keep for the rest of our lives, it is the last vestige of everything that we hold on to. And here Serapion says, I have sold that book because it told me to sell everything. I have let go of every last crutch that I have in my single-minded pursuit to be with my God. So the biggest question, how do we answer it? How do we live without regret and recrimination? I want to read you my response to this young man and see if it makes any sense to you. Remember, he started by telling me that that my voice was still resonating in his head. And I didn't read that to you just because he was saying nice things about me. There's really a point to this. I wrote back to him, I can't tell you how much your note means to me. Thank you for taking time to write. I'll tell you what. You asked me how to live for Matthew and your other friend and anyone and everyone else in your life. Well, you just did it. You've given me a great gift just by telling me that I mean something to you when I had no idea if I touched you or if you ever thought of me. You made my day and you reminded me that what I do is not unimportant and that my life has meaning for you. If we would all keep touching each other in this way, letting people know what they mean to us, how much better would life be? Any regrets you feel for someone you've lost will be overwhelmed by the fulfillment you get when you immerse yourself in the person right in front of you. That's how it works. Matthew is gone now. We'll never forget him, but if we allow ourselves to grieve for too long, to the point that we're not present to the ones right here and right now, we're missing the point. We all need to let Matt remind us how important it is to really connect with everyone who crosses our paths and let them know that we see them and that they are important. Keep giving gifts to everyone you meet, just as you gave this gift to me today, and I promise you won't regret a thing. Matthew is fine right now. He can surf. He can do whatever he wants. Don't worry about what remained unfinished between you two. It's complete now from Matthew's point of view. Now let's you and I go complete all the relationships that we have right in front of us and really enjoy them and leave people better than we found them. That's how we live for Matthew. That's it. There's really nothing more. The biggest question in life has the smallest answer. To be present to the person right in front of us is the answer to a fulfilled life. It is the answer to the Lord's Prayer. It is the prayer itself. It's the culmination of the rite of passage and the hero's journey to understand that after all the things that we search for, it comes right back to that moment and that person and what you could give to them if you could just see them and not be immersed in all the stuff that holds you back, that keeps you afraid, that makes you obsessive and compulsive. Just leave people better than we found them at every step. See them. Be present. Those are the reasons. The hero is not the person who completes the journey. The hero is the one whom the journey completes in this process, in this understanding. This relationship. Relationship is always the purpose of our lives and our journey. The unity, the connection is what Jesus was trying to show us. Understanding that, we can live without regret, without recrimination, without guilt, and without fear. Mother Teresa said, in this life, we cannot do great things. We can only do small things with great love. She's speaking the same thing. Finally, I wanted to just read you this little passage from the teaching of Tecumseh. And if you don't know who Tecumseh was, he was the great Shawnee chief of the 18th and the 19th century, fighting for the independence of his tribes in an expanding America after the Revolution. But he writes, so live your life that the fear of death can never enter your heart. Love your life. Perfect your life. Beautify all things in your life. Seek to make your life long and of service to your people. Show respect to all people, but grovel to none. When you arise in the morning, give thanks for the light, for your life, for your strength. Give thanks for your food and for the joy of living. If you see no reason for giving thanks, the fault lies only in yourself. When it comes your time to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with the fear of death, so that when their time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time to live their lives over again in a different way. Sing your death song and die like a hero going home. We're all heroes in our own life's journey. If we answer the call, if we choose to be. Jesus said, whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Have you ever wondered what that means? It means that the journey is not what we think it is. It's about losing ourselves, not finding anything. We already have everything we need. But if we will lose ourselves in the living of each moment, in the service and the connection with each other, we find something of infinite more importance. Because what's left is that smallest answer to the biggest question. Let's pray. Father, once again, I want to thank you for the example that Matthew set. To be a hero in his own journey. To be a way shower for all of us. Someone who went through everything that he was supposed to go through and was changed by it. Was understanding more and more who he was and why he was here. Father, I pray that all of us would have the courage to be able to do what he was doing. To have the desire to move from the familiar, from the comfortable, from the routine and the habitual, to move into uncharted territory, to empty ourselves completely out of all the things that we hold on to, so that we can realize whatever it is that you have for us. To not be sidetracked and diverted by all these things that call to us and try to move us into spectacular areas, but be content with just the moments with each other. Thank you, Father, for this gift that you've given us. We want to be your people fully and completely. We want to be completely aware and immersed in your presence this moment and every moment. Help us to continue this journey. Help us to see ourselves as heroes in our journey so that we can have everything we need to continue to move forward. Thank you for everything that you give us, Lord. Thank you for loving us as you do. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.
All right. Hey, let's all stand.